Today's biggest stories, tomorrow's newsmakers in the capital city. Your host is Michael Cohen for the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Good evening, Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. As we start this week off, the Dow down over 600 points today as the market reacts to the S&P credit rating downgrade for the U.S. I'll talk to a local economist about what our new AA-plus rating will mean to the country. Then I'll be joined by a local certified financial planner to discuss what you should do as you're likely seeing your 401k taking quite a hit. But first, while some are applauding the debt ceiling deal, others say the cuts-only approach means that Michigan will see less federal money, resulting in reductions in some key programs. To discuss the potential impact of the deal, I'm joined by Democratic State Representative Fred Durhall. Welcome to the program. I hope, Fred, that you are there. Yep.
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
Thank you for inviting me
sure,
to talk to you.
Sure. Thanks for coming on board. Now, before we get to that issue, Fred, I'd like to talk to you about the state's redistricting maps. I know that's something you've been directly involved in, and the Democrats are not pleased with how the Republican maps have been configured. Where does that issue stand this evening?
Well, where it looks at this point, it looks really as though the only other alternative is going to be to go to court. We have talked to the Republican House leadership, and we've talked to the governor in addition to the Speaker of the House. And this past weekend, we were in some marathon negotiations, and what ended up happening is that the Republicans from the House gave us two alternatives, an option A and B, and both of them were unacceptable to us. So we have, as of this morning, rejected officially both of those offers. And it looks like we're going to go to court.
Can you give me a sense of what types of options you had in front of you then?
Well, I think this, the governor has not signed the bills yet, and the governor still could make something happen if he wants to do that. Obviously, given what we have been given, the Republicans have failed to negotiate in good faith. They gave us two options without even having us there at the table to help design them, and said, take it or leave it, essentially. And so we decided to leave it.
You know, some people bring up the fact that this is the way the process is set up. The party that's in power gets to make these decisions at this point in time once the census is complete. I mean, would Democrats really have taken a different approach if they had full control of the redistricting process?
Oh, I think so, yes. We have not been in a position, and we were in power, if you remember, last session. We did what we could to try to reach across the aisle and work in a bipartisan way. Government is not served when there is this one party versus the other party kind of attitude going on where the one party is working to try to kill the other party. I don't think that that's what Americans expect out of democracy. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't believe that that is what is in the best interest of the legislature itself in terms of being able to operate on other items, too.
I know the Detroit area maps drew some harsh criticism from Democrats, but considering the population loss in the city, isn't an equally dramatic change in the way the districts there are configured or reconfigured an appropriate step?
Well, I think a judge will take a look at that, but I can tell you this. The 13th and 14th congressional districts have changed monumentally, and because they have, it's going to create quite a bit of political unrest in the city of Detroit and outside of the city in the near suburbs. That's number one. As it relates to the House of Representatives seats and this thing, they have also been changed to the point where we end up with eight people right now running against each other. Okay. I think that's not in the interest of a good government, and it's a liquidation of black political power in the state of Michigan, which is unacceptable.
Essentially, then, up to this point, there was a chance for a compromise, but you're saying that as of this evening, there will not be one, and this is going to court.
Right, unless something miraculous happens in the next 24 to 48 hours, I don't think that we're going to be able to resolve the differences.
Now, in terms of this debt ceiling deal, other than some of the basics, such as the initial round of cuts in discretionary spending totaling $917 billion and $2.4 trillion of spending cuts in the next decade, it doesn't seem to be very clear exactly where the cuts will be made. Why do you think that Michigan will likely be directly impacted by this plan?
Well, we have several. I sit on the Appropriations Committee, and I can tell you that we have several departments that rely heavily on federal money. Transportation is one that's almost exclusively federal, and any reductions made in that area is going to cause a lot of trauma in the state already, as you well know. Because of our budget problems, we've had to cut back and, in some cases, jeopardize the match for federal funds anyway. And this is, you know, when you lessen the pot, that means that you haven't lessened the competition. So we're still going to have 50 states going after the same pot of money, and money that we cannot get will be dispersed to other areas. And now with a reduction on the national setting, you're looking at health care, you're looking at transportation, as I said, education could be affected, social services obviously will be affected.
I'm talking to Democratic State Representative Fred Durhall. It isn't the federal situation is actually quite similar to the one we're facing here in Michigan, that tough economic times mean making painful decisions that are simply necessary to avoid an even worse financial outcome. Aren't lawmakers just doing what they need to finally do, which is reduce the spending that has been out of control?
Well, I don't think in Michigan spending has been out of control. I think quite the opposite. We have had reductions in our budget for the last 5 to 8 budget cycles. I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is how do you program the money that you have? And in the state of Michigan, we had an additional trauma, and that is that, you know, 3 of our automobile companies, the giants in this country, fell into financial problems. And because of those layoffs and because of the reduction in the labor workforce, the tax collections were down. And when that happens, you know, you have to kind of adjust. Mm-hmm. So we have adjusted. We've cut spending. In fact, state spending has been cut almost to the bone.
You know, both Republicans and Democrats acknowledge that there's a need to remove these tax loopholes, especially on the federal level, to bring in more revenue. I mean, aren't program cuts also going to be necessary as part of the plan?
Well, I think that eventually, yes. The entitlements are always going to be looked at first as an area to cut. I would think, though, that people have to juxtapose that with the rising unemployment rate and the failure to be able to create new jobs. In the last couple of years, we have a problem with regard to trying to set society straight when you have all these negatives operating in front of you.
Do you agree in general then rather than raising taxes, which Democrats in Washington were calling for, the real issue is closing these tax loopholes?
I think the tax loopholes have to be closed. It is unfair. It's tacitly unfair for a person to make $1 million and not be able to pay taxes on the $1 million that they make. Meanwhile, poor guys like you and I have to, pay taxes on every dime that we get. I think that the country needs to look at a graduated income tax based upon the amount of money that a person is making. Tax would be applicable based on that. Obviously, there's no political stomach to do such a thing. And it will be fought tooth and nail by those who are rich. And those are the guys who, the ones, you know, really the third of the folk in this country who have the money have decided that they don't want to pay, and they're using the loopholes to be able to, you know, keep them out of the position of having to pay taxes. Those tax dollars are consumed by both the rich and the poor. And I think it makes sense for the middle class and the poor class of folk to also be able to know that they are going to have people paying their fair share of tax.
About a minute left here. So many recall efforts are now ongoing here in the state, and the head of the state chamber of commerce told me that for groups like the MEA to back these efforts when they're essentially politically motivated recalls is simply the wrong thing to do. Do you agree with that?
I happen to disagree with that. I think, first of all, you know, that statement is coming from people who want to change government fundamentally the way they want to and not be able to answer to anybody for those actions. First of all, you know, I think that when we start attacking teachers, when we start attacking Public Act 312 in this state, which is the act that allows for, negotiation in areas where contracts are disputed, I think we're really attacking the base of our society as it relates to workers and workers' rights. And I think that if you do that, then people like the MEA and the UAW and some of the others are going to be alarmed. If we look at the policies that have been passed in the House in this justice session that we're currently in, it sends some very dangerous vibes out to the working class. And the unions are the folks who represent them. And I don't see that it's any more unfair for the MEA to get politically involved in efforts to try to change that as folk are who, you know, pay money to get these people elected mm-hmm. who are going to have this agenda. I think it evens out, quite frankly.
Democratic State Representative Fred Durhall, thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.